on my reading in Woody Allen, which is where I usually start. Because last week we were talking about his saying that he doesn't believe in the afterlife, but he's taking along a change of underwear, which I thought was sort of neat. And the one I also used last week was, not only is there no God, but trying to get a plumber, but try getting a plumber on a weekend, which I thought was sort of neat too. The one that I hadn't read before is, I want to share with you a little bit, if you, and not everybody likes his craziness as much as I do. He has a section in which he describes a spring bulletin in adult education from a university. And I thought they'd neat. Like, here's a course coming up, Introduction to Psychology, the Theory of Human Behavior, Why Some Men Are Called Lovely Individuals, and Why There Are Others You Just Want to Pinch. Is there a split between mind and body, and if so, which is better to have? Aggression and rebellion are discussed. Students particularly interested in these aspects of psychology are advised to take one of the winter term courses, quote, Introduction to Hostility, or Intermediate Hostility, or Advanced Hatred, or Theoretical Foundations of Loathing, which I thought is good. Special consideration given to a study of consciousness as opposed to unconsciousness, with many helpful hints on how to remain conscious. Philosophy 1, everyone from Plato to Camus is read. The following topics are covered. Ethics, the categorical imperative, and 6 ways to make it work for you, which I thought was great. Aesthetics, is art the mirror of life or what? And metaphysics, what happens to the soul after death? How does it manage? Epistemology, is knowledge knowable, and if not, how do we know? And the absurd, why existence is often considered silly, particularly for men who wear brown and white shoes. I don't understand. Manyness and oneness are studied as they relate to otherness. Students achieving oneness will move ahead to two-ness. Then he has a philosophy, this is the last one, philosophy XX1XB is the name of the number of the course. It's Introduction to God, Confrontation with the Creator of the Universe through Informal Lectures and Field Trips. he's really far up.
University,
oh my God. Yeah, those are some good courses.
God is not dead, he's just an underachiever.
That's right. Yeah. That's one of Woody's things. Well, This Nation Under God, some talk about faith in America, is really a some presentation on the basis of this book, American Civil Religion, by Russell Ritchie and Donald Jones. Ritchie and Jones are, I think, largely sociologists who pulled together some basic essays on this subject of American civil religion. For those of you who may not be aware of it, since about 1967, I guess it is, when Robert Bellah wrote an article about American civil religion, it's been a topic, at least in some circles, and certainly in some theological circles, about what kind of religion is going on in America that may be, as Bellah thinks, alongside of the more formal or traditional religious faiths. And there's a series of 10 or 12 articles in here that look at it from a variety of perspectives, at least from history, sociology, and theological, and one English perspective. The book has been ordered, and again, one of those unfortunate things, it's not with us, so anybody who wants to buy it can't buy it here yet. Hope maybe it'll still come in. I've chosen to take 3 of the chapters and work with one of those each day. They are not mutually exclusive, but I think that's probably a more intelligent way to do it. The first day, today, I want to talk about Robert Bellah's first article that was sort of kicked it off back in 1967, and that's simply entitled Civil Religion in America, which is obvious enough. Tomorrow I want to do monkey around with Martin Marty's response to this, that's entitled Two Kinds of Civil Religion. And he gets into, let me tell you what the third one. The third one that I want to deal with is Herbert Richardson's Civil Religion in Theological Perspective. And then I'll do that. We'll try to work with that on Saturday. The way it works out is that Bellah tends to say civil religion ain't so bad. It might have very good things in it. Marty is in the middle and says maybe so, maybe not. And Richardson is dead against it. Says it's really a bad scene. So you get you may not get the full flavor in one session if you can make three fine, or at least you know there are a variety of responses to it, okay? I want to tell you about the five kinds of civil religion that is talked about in this book. But first, I wondered if you'd be willing to participate with me in just talking about what you see as patriotism. What is patriotism for you? Anybody willing to say what that means to you?
Really, basically, I'll say that it just means saying, like, being a United States citizen, just simply saying that. I'm a United States
citizen.
And recognizing that.
Okay.
Responsibility.
Responsibility. Okay.
Recognizing and accepting the authority of government-type people.
Okay.
Willingness to defend the land.
Okay. Anybody else?
It's belonging to a group, another kind of
thing. Standing up on the Star Spangled Banner is selling the ballpark, and saluting the flag or taking your hat off when the flag goes by, putting the flag out on holidays, national holidays.
I think also to respect people who don't believe they have to salute the flag.
Okay. Yes, you have.
I think that there's a very strong emotional kind of response also that has to do with the patriotism that's very hard to sort out. I personally felt it, and it was interesting as I observed it, on the inauguration day for Carter. A very strong emotional kind of response that I was surprised to find in myself. And I'm getting into what you're talking about, because I recognize that this was also a spiritual response. And and helped me to realize the difficulty then of sorting out the two things that it really can become a kind of religion. But I felt really high as I observed that on television.
Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about some of that. Anyone else? What's patriotism for you?
A devotion to the ideals under which this country was founded, many of which don't get practiced perfectly, but still they're there. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else?
I think maybe a responsibility to read enough and listen enough in order to know what the current issues are that are being discussed, voted on, that are happening in the state, the nation.
Okay. Anyone else?
Responsible participation in the process.
Okay. Okay.
I have a question.
Sure.
Is there a distinction between talking about being a responsible citizen and being patriotic?
Would you make that distinction?
I don't know. That just occurred to me that there could be. It's very possible that somebody could live in a country saying the United States and be a responsible citizen in terms of that, which is saying, and not be patriotic one bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what we're getting at. What would you mean by patriotism then?
I guess then I would think of patriotism more as like the emotional response that was referred to and stuff like that.
Well, maybe there's a difference between patriotism and nationalism.
And nationalism, yeah.
It comes to me through love of God and love of this country. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the distinction too lies in identifying yourself with your country or not, with that patriotism, mm-hmm. responsible citizen part.
Well, for instance, the range seems to be, mm-hmm. to have a bumper sticker that says love it or leave it on one end, and on the other end, leaking national secrets to the press you know, because you think that's what really ought to be done. But there seems to be, you know, that really wide range of, I'm not saying that those that's the best definition of range, but that is part of the range that in which people would say, that's patriotic to say love it or leave it. And another person would say, that's patriotic to take secrets that our leaders in government at least have said ought not be released and release them. And both people are saying, no, that's patriotism. I think some people are saying that. I'm not saying everybody felt patriotic when they did that, but it seems to be, you know, that kind of a range. Well, let me sort of jump in then to the book and then come back to some of the things you said. You used some key words as you went through, and I thought they were very interesting. First of all, this is a pre-Carter book. The last stuff they've written in here was Bella's answer to all the things that had been written. He has the first one that we're going to talk about today, and then he has a postscript at the end. That was written just at Watergate. So this really doesn't tackle that part of it at all. I think that the issue of civil religion, American civil religion, is even more important since Carter coming on the scene and the way he is, the style of his leadership, his personal Christian commitment, as well as his human rights things, which he tends to derive very strongly from his personal faith. So it's even more than is in here. That's not referred to in here. The five kinds of civil religion that are talked about in here, and then I'll get into to Bella, are these. First, it's a folk religion. In other words, the notion of civil religion in terms of a folk religion, which you would examine the actual life, ideas, values, ceremonies, and loyalties of the people, like in a survey, an opinion poll. You'd find out what these are, and from that, you would deduce or make conclusions on the existence and a status of a civil religion. What these people are about reveals the things that they value, and therefore it would be a folk way, and that religious, their values, the things they give priority to, the thing they really hang on to or want, would be a definition of a civil religion. Would not have anything to do with a revelation or all this kind of business, which is, what do people make their priorities? And from that get a folk way, a description of a civil religion. Okay, that's one. The second one is a meaning of civil religion can be categorized as transcendent universal religion of the nation. And this is closer to what Bella comes down to. Sort of the religion of the republic, which is pretty prophetic, for this religion stands in judgment over the folk ways. It has a transcendent nature to it. There's something more, a corrective against the idolatrous tendencies. So this one would be looking at the folk ways and the people and say, hey, there's something missing, or there's something more there than ought to be there. So it's an understanding of the American experience in the light of ultimate or universal reality. The American experience is not, in this understanding, the ultimate experience. There's something more that judges it. But it's formalized as what that something more is. And again, that is not a revealed religion that would be exactly the same as Judaism or Christianity or perhaps some others. A third kind of American civil religion that's talked about in this book is a religious nationalism, in which the nation is not simply set there as something that evolved, but the nation becomes the object of adoration and glorification. The nation takes on a sovereign and self-transcendent character. This is the religion then of patriotism, in which the worship is of the nation. A fourth is sort of like that, but it's a little different. It's a civil religion that can be designated as democratic faith. The humane values and ideals of equality, freedom, and justice, without necessary dependence on any transcendent deity or a spiritualized nation, they represent civil religion at its best in the American experience. And so if things are just, if things are free, if there's freedom there, and if equality is being worked, that's the religion that would be espoused without any connection above, and that's sort of close to the nationalism business. And the fifth one, a little more difficult, but I think very real, is a Protestant civic piety. A Protestant civic piety. It's a sort of a fusion of Protestantism and nationalism, or the pervading Protestant coloring of the American ethos. For instance, Protestant moralism and individualism and activism, deeds, not creeds, kind of a feeling. Or pragmatism and the work ethic, or the grand motif of missionizing the world in behalf of America, you know, would be American civil religion of this type. This is, you know, sort of makes the common religion, it was the common religion in the frontier of America. This is what you were carrying out there. You were conquering all these places in behalf of this Protestant piety. That tended to be very reflective of the move to the West, too. Those five strains are what are found in that whole amalgam of American civil religion. But the one that Bella, now we'll get into Bella's article, it works with is that third one we talked about, a second one we talked about, transcendental universal religion of the nation, in which there's something going on that is beyond the nation and which criticizes the nation, but which is very real as a form of religion, according to Bella. Let me share some of the things that he says and then hope that you would respond and have questions about it, if that's okay, all right? Bella's contention was, back in those days, although he made it quite clear, he didn't dream this up. It was there all along, and he sort of recognized it and gave it this name, and that's what sort of caused this furor since that time, about 10 years ago. Few have realized that there actually exists, alongside of, and rather clearly differentiated from the churches, an elaborate and well-institutionalized civil religion in America. This is really his jumping point. Few have realized there actually exists, alongside of and rather clearly differentiated from the churches, an elaborate and well-institutionalized civil religion in this country. He starts out by quoting... He starts out by quoting the Kennedy inaugural in 61. And I'll just take some excerpts out and show you what he does with those. "For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago." And at the end, "The same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man have come from the not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God." And at the very end, he says, "We ask God's blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own." In those paragraphs, some people could say, well, this was sentiment and that's what people do, Bella contends, and he says, but if you really understand the function of ceremonial and ritual in a society, you won't buy in on that, says Bella, because it's often indicative of deep-seated values and commitments that are made that are not made explicit in the course of everyday life. You don't say it, but on ceremonial occasions, somebody says it for you. He points out that there's no reference to Jesus Christ or Moses or the Christian Church or indeed the Catholic Church, but there are references to God. The only reference is to the concept of God. "Our government makes no sense," and he quotes Eisenhower, "our government makes no sense unless it is founded on a deeply felt religious faith, and I don't care what it is." That's Eisenhower's statement. Mm-hmm. And Bella is comparing Kennedy and Eisenhower at this stage.
That first thing that you read struck me as being rather interesting, because it seems to me that the civic religion is not well differentiated from the Christian community, as in fact people within the Christian Church are often confuse right. what it is to be right. a Christian with what it is to be a right. good citizen, and so that you find, for instance, during the 50s and the in the witchcraft hunts of Joe McCarthy.
Sure.
John Birch Society is springing up within the churches and under the aegis of the church, so that democracy was, you know, that is, the church existed in order to keep communists out of the country.
No, he would agree with you. He would say, what I think he's trying to say here in the light of the stuff he wrote, the rest of it he writes, is that it's possible to lay it out and distinguish it.
Yeah.
But that generally it is not seen that
it's
way.
It's not seen as
no, but it's possible to do that. It's possible to take it and say, hey, look at here it is, and that's different from this. But popularly, and that's why he's really writing
it's
it, it's all muddled up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But what he is emphasizing that is it is distinguishable. You are able to separate it out. That's what he meant. It isn't that people do. Okay. So he goes on then to say civil religion relates to political society. It raises the issues of how civil religion relates to the political society on the one hand and to private religious organization on the other. The principle of separation of church and state guarantees the freedom of religious belief and association, but at the same time clearly segregates the religious sphere, which is to be considered essentially private, from the political one. Then he goes on. Although matters of personal religious belief, worship, and association are considered to be strictly private affairs, there are at the same time certain common elements of religious orientation that the great majority of Americans share. These have played a crucial role in the development of American institutions and still provide a religious dimension for the whole fabric of American life, including the political sphere. This public religious dimension is expressed in a set of beliefs, symbols, and rituals that I call American civil religion. The inauguration of a president is an important ceremonial event in this religion. It reaffirms, among other things, the religious legitimation of the highest political authority. In other words, in political theory, sovereignty rests, of course, with the people. But implicitly and often explicitly, the ultimate sovereignty has been attributed to God. This is the meaning of the motto, "In God We Trust," or as well as the inclusion of the phrase, "Under God," in the Pledge of the Flag. By the way, the original Pledge of the Flag was done by a minister in which he didn't say "Under God." Marty points out that "Under God" was added by a secular Congress and left out by a minister, which was sort of interesting as a sideline. So what they're saying is that the will of the people is not itself the criterion in civil religion. The will of the people is not itself the criterion of right and wrong. It's possible that the people may be wrong, because God is looking at it. The rights of human beings, in other words, are reacting to the control of the kings. This is what they were reacting against. The rights of humans are more basic than any political structure. This is what the civil religion is affirming. But it also, and it says that, it also provides a transcendent goal for the political process. It isn't just that that would happen, but beyond that is a transcendent goal that this political process is after. Here on earth, God's work must truly be our own, is the way Kennedy put it. So the obligation is both collective and individual, to carry out God's will on earth. This is what he maintains was being said. Let me jump. Rousseau was the first to talk about civil religion, not in the same way that, that was predated Bella's thing. And the simple dogmas of civil religion are, according to Rousseau, the existence of God, the life to come, the reward of virtue and the punishment of vice, and the exclusion of religious intolerance. Now that's the civil religion dogma that he points out. And he does a little study of the Declaration of Independence in this light, the four references to God in the Declaration. The first speaks of the law of nature and of nature's God. The second is the famous statement, are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. The third is an appeal to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. And the fourth is a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. In these last two references, a biblical God of history who who stands in judgment of the world is indicated. And it's interesting, you know, that a country that keeps saying there is a separation of church and state has this much theological fervor and flavor in there. And he has other quotes from about that. The words and acts of the founding fathers, especially the first few presidents, shape the form and tone of the civil religion as it has been maintained ever since. The God of civil religion is not only rather Unitarian, he is also on the austere side, more related to order, law, and right than to salvation and love. Even though he is somewhat deist in caste, because these folks were mostly deists who put the Constitution together, the Declaration and the Constitution, he is by no means simply a watchmaker God. He is actively interested and involved in history with special concern for America. Here the analogy is much less to do with natural law than with ancient Israel. The equation of America with Israel is the idea of the American Israel. In the idea of the American Israel is not infrequent. That comes up in the writings, early writings, very frequently. What was implicit in the words of Washington, that were quoted up above, becomes explicit in Jefferson's second inaugural when he said, "I shall need, too, the favor of that being in whose hands we are, who led our fathers as Israel of old from their native land and planted them in a country flowing with all necessities and comforts of life. Europe is Egypt, America, the promised land. God has led his people to establish a new social order that shall be a light unto all the nations." This is the kind of civil religion espoused by the early presidents. Okay. Implicit that there would be a quite clear division of function between civil religion and Christianity. It was dominated by Protestantism and by the Enlightenment, but it was separated from that. Then he takes I'll just skim this. He goes to the Civil War and civil religion, because the greatest prophet of civil religion becomes Abraham Lincoln. What's added to it, the Declaration of Independence and Constitution were the sacred scriptures, and Washington, the divinely appointed Moses in this civil religion. But the Civil War, was the bloodiest wars of the 19th century, led to new understanding of civil religion through the work of Abraham Lincoln. Especially, you know, the Gettysburg Address too, and all his "With Malice Toward None and Charity for All," the new theme of death, sacrifice, and rebirth enters the civil religion. It's part of what they call the Lincoln New Testament among the civil scriptures.
Elmer, are you aware? I remember a confirmation pastor telling us about that Abraham Lincoln once wrote a pamphlet in which he tried to prove that Jesus Christ was not the Son of God.
Right. There's a reference to that in here, but see, that would be, and again, the contrast, that the civil religion that he espoused was not the particularity of Christianity at all, but it was very strong. And the fellow here, Bella, says it's probably that he was a better religious thinker than most of them were going on today. It doesn't say very much, but you know, he thinks that he really maybe said more than the rest. Here's a quote from Herndon, who is Lincoln's law partner, wrote after Lincoln dies. "For 50 years, God rolled Abraham Lincoln through his fiery furnace. He did it to try Abraham and to purify him for his purposes. This made Mr. Lincoln humble, tender, forbearing, sympathetic to suffering, kind, sensitive, tolerant, broadening, deepening, and widening his whole nature, making him the noblest and loveliest character since Jesus Christ. I believe that Lincoln was God's chosen one." And then Bella goes on, with the Christian archetype in the background, Lincoln, our martyred president, was linked to the war dead who gave the last full measure of devotion. The theme of sacrifice was indelibly written into the civil religion. And from that, the cemeteries became the shrines of American civil religion. There's a whole chapter in this book on Memorial Day that traces the thread of Memorial Day celebrations around the country into four stages on how it happens. You can go in and he even has it outlined of what they go through individually and in groups, and finally focusing at the cemetery, in which the same kinds of statements about usually the sovereignty of the country and the call for the willingness to die in behalf of the country, not unlike the willingness for almost any religion that calls you to give yourself, total self to it. Let me finish by just saying what he says about civil religion today. He thinks that civil religion at its best is a genuine apprehension of universal and transcendent religious reality as seen in, or one could say almost say as revealed, through the experience of the American people. He thinks that civil religion at its best is a genuine apprehension of universal and transcendent religious reality as seen in, or one could say almost say as revealed, through the experience of the American people. He said, they really did see God at work this way. Who are we to say they were wrong? Secondly, he says, isn't it essential that any grouping of people has a vision if it is to succeed in its life together? And if that vision is just, let's get the dishes done, Paul Hain was talking about, you know, and be happy as we do it, or whether that vision is to have a society and everyone is equal. Isn't it essential to have a civil religion in order to survive? A lot of people would say, it turned out to be a Democrat or Republican religion in contrast to something else. One more quote. God has clearly been a central symbol in the civil religion from the beginning and remains so today. This symbol is just as central to the civil religion as it is to Judaism or Christianity. In the late 18th century, this posed no problem, for even Tom Paine, contrary to his detractors, was not an atheist. From left to right, and regardless of church or sect, all could accept the idea of God. But today, as even Time magazine has recognized, the meaning of the word God is by no means so clear or so obvious. There is no formal creed in the civil religion. We've had a Catholic president now. It's conceivable we could even have a Jewish one. But could we have an agnostic president? The civil religion has been a point of articulation between the profoundest commitments of Western religions and philosophical tradition and the common beliefs of ordinary Americans. Are we at a point where we could accept somebody who says, you know, I don't believe God is part of the whole thing? Or would that be anti-American? And if so, what does that say about civil religion? That's sort of what Bella says. Bella says, don't knock it until we know more about it. And this paragraph, this book, chapter at the end, is a lot less after Watergate. This was written obviously before, just at the beginning of the Nixon era. Afterwards, he's much more critical of it than he is, but he still comes down and says, it may not be so bad. So, if you got responses or questions, or I hope we'd have some discussion back and forth.
One of the things that just struck me about when you said it would be possible to have a
an agnostic
atheist or president.
Or agnostic, but he didn't even go as far as atheist. Just agnostic.
The words that we have often attached, the word atheistic communist, that will set up communism is the enemy, we have also attached to that a religious judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of putting those two together has reinforced a kind of this is the enemy.
I'm not very well traveled. Would our American civil religion be much different? I mean, don't all nations have some kind of a civil religion?
Bella goes further than that and says all groups have a form of civil religion. All significant groups, you know, that stay in existence for a time, can have what eventually could be called, you know, depending on how long it takes to develop it, a form of religious. But he would certainly say that about other nations, right? What does that say to you?
Everybody thinks God's their own thing.
Anybody else got reaction to that? Or?
But there's a need for it.
Going back, I know about this agnostic. Wasn't Thomas Jefferson pretty much agnostic?
No, he's a deist.
He was deist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was his quote about that same being that took out of Israel. He needed the same being. Yeah. Yes. Please.
Don't we maybe have a holden story?
Yeah.
What would you say?
Yeah.
How would you describe it?
Well, we believe so firmly in our statement of purpose. Think about it a little more.
Okay.
Thing we do, I have to think about.
You should be happy.
Well, the suspicion is there too. I know that I was very shocked. I was quite active in Boy Scouts, and then I heard Missouri Synod, for example, would not permit Boy Scouts, partly because of a kind of a wishy-washy
civil religion.
Civil religion really is what it would amount to. A scout is a brother to every other scout. Mm-hmm. You cannot be a brother with a Hindu scout. You can't be a brother with a Mohammedan scout, and so on.
So you're saying there have been some questions raised along the line. Yes, Kate.
Well, what's the difference between civil religion as we're talking about it now and just an operational philosophy or a conceptual framework? Is it the God implications that make it a religion rather than a...
For Bella, who represents, you know, in the five categories I gave, the transcendent nature of it, for Bella, in his understanding of civil religion, it would include some specific relationship to someone, at least, beyond the present operation. In other words, if you said the way to work this building was, you know, certain rules for doing it, but if you said that's the way God wants things done, then it would be moving towards a civil religion type of operation and not simply a philosophy of how to keep a building clean or used. It's that move towards the transcendent. Now, Marty has a little different kind of a thing. He thinks that there is a lot of civil religion, I want to talk about that tomorrow, that doesn't itself transcend it. It doesn't include God concept, but it has as much of a religious flavor in it as the transcendent does. That's his two kinds of civil religion. Then he has two kinds under each of those. But for Bella, it would be the transcendent would be implied. That's why the early ones drew on it, and he quotes Johnson, he quotes Kennedy, certainly Bella's last article starts out with Nixon's last inaugural. And that is as strong a statement of American civil religion as you can find. And he says, you know, the people have said, well, it's the 60s did away with it. He says, don't you believe it? It's a little too soon to have the funeral celebration.
I have three questions.
Sure.
The first one, I think, maybe could just be thrown out. I mean, not necessarily thrown out the window, but
yeah.
I was wondering if Mormonism then would be sort of the archetypal, the ultimate extreme of American civil religion.
Might be very close.
I thought And mm-hmm. And
by the way, that's covered in here. It's mentioned in a long way. Mm-hmm.
And her comment, you know, on does every country, you know, have some religion? I was wondering if countries where there's a state church, mm-hmm. Is the civil religion of that country less distinguishable than it is, say, in America? Or more overt? I mean, I'm not sure how to phrase the question, yeah. But would there be a great distinction, you know, when the government says we are, you know, say no, or we are Lutherans?
Yeah.
What if the Queen of England was an atheist? That would really blow their minds, wouldn't it, if you go into Westminster?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's, there's a guard against that.
Yeah, she couldn't be. In other words,
that's according right. According to the...
In the state church, it couldn't.
That couldn't happen.
No, couldn't happen. But I don't know what there's again. Bell in his last deals a little bit with that because he distinguishes between nation and state, and confusing that. Nation is the culture, and most states are made up of a variety of nations, and it is the move of civil religion, according to Bella, is to diffuse that. And and only to have the state, and that means the sovereignty of the political process that overrides any possibility of any individual nation or interest or whatever it may be. And so when the state is that closely identified, if that's what it is, rather than the nation in Norway or another place, it seemed to me that it would be even maybe more powerful. Third.
We were talking about this in an American Christianity class last year.
Mm-hmm.
At the seminary, it was brought up that it becomes exceedingly difficult to be Lutheran in the United States because of American civil religion. That is, although in our Lutheran churches there is as much of that present, you know, because we're all Americans and living through that, the actual blending of the theological presuppositions we work with in American civil religion does not work as well as it does in the Calvinist, for example, the Calvinist.
Yes.
Or whatever. And
sure.
That becomes increasingly difficult then, like right now, I know there's a lot of talk going on in parishes, you know, I keep talking to pastors who say, you know, we're not Lutheran anymore, you know. What's happening, and really a real concern about that, and a lot of talk about what it means to be that.
Mm-hmm.
Raise that issue too.
I think that's very apropos because Calvinism, Puritanism, as a result of Calvinism, is what influenced that early stance, and it was that individual calling, and your God blessing you in your work, and personal achievement, and a reward for that. And mostly middle class. It wasn't that attractive to either the very rich or even the very poor. It was a middle class achieving kind of a thing. And that God's will was worked out by institutes, which tended to be law oriented rather than a revelation of a God who is beyond the law, above the law, and fulfilling the law. Yeah.
You kind of touched on what I was going to ask. I was going to ask, was Bella mentioned anything about the fact that civil religion only seems to function for politicians in a sense, or for people who are within that realm, whether Protestant work ethic or whatever works for them.
Yeah.
You know, what about the poor people, or maybe underachiever or something.
Sure.
Whoever doesn't fit within that whole realm of success, orientation, whatever that is. Does he mention anything about
it? Bella doesn't deal with that very well. Richardson very strongly does. The third one that I want to deal with is very strongly deals with it. Bella simply says that the American scene is that the American people buy into that civil religion which tends to focus on those achievers and the implication is that's why it would be possible not to be really concerned for centuries and about those who are not achieving. because it was the civil religion said the way to be is that way, and if you weren't, it wasn't that there was something wrong with the state, it was that you weren't religious enough or right with God or whatever it would be. It played in to the repression, played in and supported the lack of concern. He doesn't spend a lot of time on that, but what he's trying to do to draw is the overall thread that this is what's really happened, and he doesn't draw those implications. But Richardson does, very strongly. Yeah?
I was thinking about what are the major celebrations. You've mentioned the inauguration as a
Memorial Day?
But it seems to me that I'm just thinking about the kinds of things that are most catch people who aren't really members of the Christian Church or members of the Jewish community or something. I would vote for Thanksgiving.
Oh, sure.
As being, and that's something the churches themselves use almost as a... It seems to me Thanksgiving services are more... are better attended than even, say, Easter in my church.
Is that right?
Yeah. You can go to the Hollywood Bowl on Easter and see in Southern California, but you can't go to the Hollywood Bowl for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm. What did Pentecost fall on this year? Was it Flag Day?
14th of June, I think, yeah.
Or right before
Father's right around
Day.
It. Yeah.
And
Father's Day. And we had a Father's Day sermon.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what happened. A friend of mine, pastor, Biggie, you know, her senior pastor had a sermon, and she could not believe it. She said it was Pentecost Sunday, and they got a sermon on America and fathers and hit flags, and, you know.
And that many people, like Bella's theme would be that most people would not notice or care. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be okay, because they would be melding civil religion with their own, and that would be fine, because their religion would support the civil religion of the country, and they would expect the civil religion of the country to support them, and so it wouldn't really make any difference whether there was any distinctiveness about that. 4th of July would be another in answer to that. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, I have a statement, I want to make an observation.
Good.
The observation is, look at the history of Israel in terms of the unity of, you know, God calls Yahweh calls the people of Israel into being as a nation, to be a holy nation that has, he is God alone, and institutes the king, and that every new year the king is the coronation,
You
had coronation psalms, etc.
Mm-hmm, sure.
That and he has turned the Son of God as the representative of the people,
mm-hmm.
and that the nation of Israel is the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, does the civil religion somehow stem from the Israel itself being the chosen, etc.? You know, I think there's a lot of parallels in there.
Bella makes a very strong point of the Judaic background. The early symbolism of civil religion has been Hebraic, without being in any specific sense Jewish, and goes on from there. At Gettysburg, it took more of a New Testament twist of the sacrifice, the human sacrifice, and the Savior thing, but even that was, you know, implied in the Old Testament. And then in his later chapter, his whole, or is that Bella? No, it's Richardson. We'll get to that. Richardson draws the parallel between the agricultural nature worship, moving to the urban kind of selling products, kingdom move through Moses and the official law, and then the model, rather than being either agrarian or nature or family, became kingly rule, authority, sovereignty, and law. And he feels that was only offset in the New Testament, which set aside that by revealing a suffering Savior in contrast to a ruling authority through law. So obedience to law, which in some part of the Judaic background was very important, certainly not exclusively, because there's more to the Old Testament than that. He says that's why, Richardson maintains that's why Americans today tend to be very intrigued by the Old Testament. It appeals to a legal setup of doing certain things and getting through it, and coming out really nicely out of a civil religion orientation.
Let me go one step further. I was thinking about the development of our country, and you know, a lot of Indian massacres in the beginning were sometimes a result of preachers who saw this being the new Israel, the Canaan, that was to be conquered as Joshua conquered the land. In fact, they interpreted it that way. And, you know, how much of civil religion is a result of the preacher, as opposed to the other way around, infiltrating the church, maybe it's going the opposite way.
Beller would maintain both have happened, but we're certainly not minimizing what you've said. And all Richardson would strengthen, would underscore what you're saying about how war then became an important part of holy keeping war. The sovereignty.
Holy war.
Yeah, and came to the word holy war, the use of the word holy. Or the word was used before, the devotion to the principles of our country. The word devotion that we pick up and use. It's normal, very normal expression. But we use the word devotion to talk about our nation. Bella just maintained it's all through. It's very difficult to filter.
I have one more thing to go back to that.
Then him.
And she's already left. I wanted to pounce on something that she has said about in her seminary training, said it becomes increasingly difficult to say Luther, to become Lutheran, and you jumped on the Calvinist, and I happen to be a Calvinist, quote, in background. But, you know, as I look at the history of the formation of the church, you know, the Lutheran revolt was as much nationalism as it was religion.
No question.
As well as the Calvinist.
No question, yeah.
You know, so as I look at it, I just can't divide any of it. I see it all as going together. Even though there may be civil religion, I think that they feed each other. And
I
don't, indistinguishable.
I think you're right, but I think that there are very serious direct threads to a Calvinistic understanding of the church state, the Geneva stuff, and even the Genevan model is talked about. And only in that sense, not to lay one against. I think it's as equally difficult to be a Catholic, to be a Roman Catholic, or to be a Calvinist in any deeper sense than Puritanism as imported to this country. But if you allow for that and then say that, then it seems to me, because Lutherans were quietists, you know, other than the church-state thing that Luther did, you know, Luther's principle was who's ever state his religion. The religion of the monarch was that. He bought into that principle. And that was one way of doing it. And Calvin was much more democratic in trying to get it done, but his stuff succeeded in influencing both the deists and the others of this country as they set it up. In that sense, it would be only true. It would be true. Bernard?
I was wondering, like, is civil religion thing about, it seems to me like civil religion is like another part of an institution, and in order for things to survive in America anyway, but in America anyway, they have to take on the characteristics of an institution in order to survive, in the sense of board members or, you know, presidents, vice presidents. And just that whole bit, just in order to stay afloat. And it would seem normal then, since churches have become institutionalized, that they would have to buy in to civil religion just in order to survive. So, and okay, my question is, then is civil religion, just a part of institutionalism in the sense, just like committee meetings and all that sort of thing, all a part of it?
Well, I don't think in that definition of institutionalism, but I think that a number of the writers, and I would agree with them, would say that any group that becomes institutionalized, a family that becomes institutionalized, as well as any a group like Holden Village or a church or whatever it is, would have some of that dimension in it. And in the case of our nation, and most nations, there tends to be. He traced it in Africa, that the movement in the African nations today is civil religious movements. Nationalism tends to be based on it. There has to be a call to be something more than you were before. And how do you lift people from what they were before? And as soon as you've done that, you've begun to institutionalize it. Now, the other side of that coin is that Richardson, that's again the one I want to work on Saturday, says the only answer to American civil religion is institutionalized Christianity. He makes a strong case for saying that it's exactly the church as institution, rather than individuals, or rather than denominations, you know, just as a denomination. And he calls for Christianity, institutionalized Christianity, which some other people get a little uptight about,
yeah,
to be the answer to civil religion. It'd be interesting to look at that, and I'd like to spend more time on it Thursday or Saturday, but I'll be glad to talk now, too.
Comment on your question?
Yeah.
How does civil religion view things like, seems like basic things in any religion, like suffering and sacrifice, and do they view those? Does the civil religion view that?
Civil religion with, for the sake of the country, you know. In other words, you would do it. That's right. And that's why the very highest form is on Memorial Day, when these noble dead who have died, you know, the guy may have hated it. He may have not wanted to do it, whatever it is, but he is enshrined because he did it in behalf of his country. Whatever. And I'm not saying there were certainly people who did it for much that wanted to do it. He had a strong personal commitment to it. But it's seen as suffering and dying, even, you know, is an ultimate way of affirming the value of your religious commitment and religious beliefs about the country. So it would be part of it. Yes, please.
Yeah, but the reference to Lincoln, yeah, he is sort of an enigma. And there's this one book by Ellen Trueblood on theology of American anguish, which gets into
yep,
Lincoln's beliefs. And I think it's dangerous to make statements that say he was this or that, because he, as in our own lives, we change views at times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or like anything in politics, you can say, well, he maybe he tried to prove something, but later on he said something else. And I just say that I think that's a good book to read,
yeah,
to attempt to put Lincoln into perspective, because yeah, as we know, a man can believe something and his disciples or those who are around him can say something else about
right,
him.
Right. The quotes from him are pretty strong, however. I wouldn't want to let him off the hook. I think more ought to be said than is said here. I was quoting only what was said here. A book called The Religion of Abraham Lincoln, too, is also in there. There's a third one on Lincoln's theology that's in here, too. And I think all of those ought to be read. I wouldn't be willing to let him off the hook for having said some of the things he did say, in spite of the fact that he also said some other things. I would say,
because I know people who won't write books because of
right,
that, because somebody will right, come back and pin them down when in 10 years they change their mind.
Surely, yeah. I'm the same way. I wrote a book in 67 that I have to live with, and I'm
yeah,
not where I was back there.
Yeah.
But at that time, you can get me for what I said.
And you see, in history, somebody will say, well,
sure,
Whitney believed this, whereas you
and at that time, that was true. I did. And if it was wrong, I misled people by just saying it and printing it. And I have to stand for that. And I guess I would hold Lincoln to do the same. There's another quote about Lincoln. Lincoln is one, this is Wolfe from Cambridge in his book, The Religion of Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln is one of the greatest theologians of America, not in the technical meaning of producing a system of doctrine, certainly not as the defender of one denomination, but in the sense of seeing the hand of God intimately in the affairs of nations. Just so the prophets of Israel criticized the events of their days from the perspective of God, who is concerned for history and who reveals his will within it. Lincoln now stands among God's latter-day prophets. Again, the Old Testament motif picked up very strongly.
Yeah, and you know, one of the difficult things is sorting it all out, because if we say God is the God of history,
yeah,
you know, who's to say one way or the other type
yeah,
of thing? If not Cyrus the...
Yeah. And to be able to say is it
yeah,
that it might be true, but it is it adequate to say that?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's a big question mark.
Yeah. Well, we'll let that do for today. If you can come back, great. I'd like to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.